Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. As I've mentioned before, and we try to honor and recognize every year, this month is October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, among other things. And, you know, usually we talk about, you know, where to go and get the mammograms and all other kind of things. But we want to talk about the survivors and thrivers with regards to disease. And I put out kind of a feeler and asked family and friends and stuff yesterday about who they might know who is in this league of survivors and thrivers. And my friend Ava Greenwell, was the author and journalist and educator who I've had on the show before, she referred me to a lady that is in that number, and her name is Sheila Jack. And good morning, Ms. Jack. Welcome to G's Power Hour, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, Gretchen. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Glad you are here in more ways than one. Thank you very, very much. So tell everybody who you are, and then tell us how this journey began for you.
Well, actually, I would say, freelance journalist now. I had a long career as a political press secretary and working in political press, which you can imagine how stressful that was. Worked in cities like New York, Atlanta, D.C. And I was a classmate of Ava's at Northwestern. I went to the McGill School of Journalism, and that's how we first met. My journey with breast cancer. Yes, it is. I'm proud to be an alum. My journey with breast cancer began in 2019. I found a lump myself. It wasn't through a mammogram. I really wasn't really into self-exam, but for some reason, that month that I found a lump, I was. I immediately told my doctor, who followed up and sent me for a biopsy. The biopsy came out positive. So that was quite a wake-up call. Now, after being diagnosed with cancer, the pandemic started, and I was told I would have to have 33 rounds of radiation, chemo, surgery, and see what happened after that. So it was the beginning of a very, very tense and sort of shocking, actually, journey. I had a sister who had breast cancer, but that was in the 90s. And she didn't have any kind of, she had surgery, a mastectomy, but she didn't have any kind of, her follow-up was successful. No more symptoms, no more problems. So I actually kind of forgot that she had it. It was been so long ago. But it was really, really intense due to the fact that because of the pandemic, I had to start chemo, let me back up. Even though it was 2019, there was some lag time. They didn't immediately start me. They started a plan. So the planning and then the actual treatment followed. Now, you can jump in here with a question whenever you want to. But
Well, that's fine. I guess one of the questions I was going to ask, prior to your sister having breast cancer and getting the mastectomy, were there any family members that you were aware of that had it, that you, or I mean, did you know, or did it just kind of slip your mind? Tell me a little bit
about
that.
No, we didn't really know, but, you know, we had female members of my family that could have had breast cancer, but they were older, and, you know, who knew there were no diagnostic means then to actually have proof. So we had no proof of any other female member having breast cancer.
Plus,
my sister was the first one.
Plus, some of our older generation were some of those that didn't talk a lot about what was going on with them, you know.
Exactly.
Private, you know, or maybe there was some sort of shame, or it might
right.
have even been that because of resources, there wasn't a whole lot that could have been done about it, you know.
You're right. You're right in all those areas, Gretchen. That's the truth. There were no resources. And I don't know why cancer was considered such a shameful condition, but it was. And it was rarely mentioned in obituaries even back then. It was just not mentioned. It was just not talked about. So, you know, if you had a stroke, fine. But cancer, nobody talked about it.
So prior to your getting cancer, what was your lifestyle like? How did you eat? How did you live? Were you exposed to? Because, you know, there's some thought that some of this is dietary related. Some of this is genetic. Some of this is environmentally related and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about what your life was like before you got cancer?
Well, actually, you're absolutely right about the causes of cancer because, you know, in terms of what the Cancer Society has shared on the website and the research I've done says that certain DNA changes passed on from parents can cause increased risk, the inherited side of it. But other lifestyle factors such as what we eat and how much we exercise can also play a large role. And it's not known how some of these risk factors can cause normal cells to become cancerous. Now, in terms of my own life, let me just say this. I tended to be, I shouldn't say tended because even now I'm fighting it. I tended to be up and down. Sometimes I would be very, very health conscious and watching what I was eating and exercising consistently and doing everything that the Cancer Society website would be proud of me for doing. Other times I slid, especially when some kind of life changes were getting me down or, you know, I just felt in a rut, I would eat what I wanted to eat, excuse me, especially living in the South. You know, fried beans are on call. You can just walk anywhere around your neighborhood, and there's something fried. So I would go into I'll call it a fried funk. You know, where I would just that was my dangerous food of choice, fried food. So you know, if I had been more consistent in terms of the diet, exercise, and discipline. You know, it would have been a better scenario. Not knowing for sure, but I mean a scenario for weight and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So what was your reaction when you first felt the lump? I mean, did you think, oh, this, you know, I mean, did you did you sense maybe that it automatically was cancer, or did you kind of say, well, you know, it may or may not be, but I'm going to go check it out anyway? You know, what was your reaction first?
Well, to be honest, I was rather cavalier about it because I had been having biopsies actually since college. I had my first biopsy as a junior in college, and
wow.
I had two more, and then in the 90s, I had a benign lump removed. I was living in New York City then and had a lump removed, and there was no problem. So when I found the lump this time, I really felt, oh, here we go again. But I was alarmed at how hard this lump was compared to the others, which was immediately a sign that something could have been wrong. It was harder. The other lumps were softer. So once I felt that harder lump, I knew I needed to get some kind of opinion, but I never dreamed that it would be cancerous.
And when it was discovered, what stage were you in?
Oh, that was the other shocking part. When they discovered it, I was stage, what she characterized as stage 3.5.
Wow. Really?
Yes. Which was shocking to me because at 3.5, it had to be growing for quite a while. And I never missed the mammogram. And I never, ever, ever did because of my sister's condition. And when I was very upset about it and talked to my doctor about it, and how could this be and how could this be missed, she said that, now, because my cancer was called invasive lobular, there's 70 to 80% of cancers are called invasive ductal. And the type of cancer I had was called lobular, and those are the glands that make breast milk. And the lobular cancer that I had spread to the lobular cancer, according to my physician at Emory University, she called it sneaky. She says it hides. And it does hide. And the problem is with African-American women, most of us have dense breast tissue that it is very hard to get clear reads on. And then African-American women especially should be super diligent about making sure that they're diligent about diagnostic opportunities and that they are also aware of the type of problems they may have in terms of whether or not they have dense breast tissue, which I have.
So, I'm kind of familiar with that myself because I've had a couple of incidents. I have never been diagnosed with breast cancer, but in a couple of instances where I took a mammogram and they needed to either retake it or they had to do, a biopsy. Where they took either some fluid or tissue to try to see what was going on. Fortunately, I didn't have that issue. But that is a problem with African-American women in terms of – and I wish now, since they've known it all of this time, that they would adjust the test, you know, or make an additional or a different test for African-American women. You know, you can't expect African-American women to go through the same tests knowing what you know, their makeup.
Exactly. And I've heard people speak about the existence of 3D mammograms.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't given a 3D mammogram, but I haven't researched them, but I think that might be a help with dense breast tissue. I'm not absolutely sure that I'd have to research it, but it sounds like it might be more comprehensive or take a closer look. But 3D mammograms are available now to people.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Sheila Jacks, who is a breast cancer survivor and thriver. She's sharing her story with us as we are focusing on breast cancer this month. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today here with survivor and thriver Sheila Jack, who has had her journey with breast cancer, and she's sharing it with us today. And so let me ask you this, from the moment that you discovered the lump to, the, you know, I guess getting your final treatment, per se, how long of a process was that, and what was involved in that process?
Oh, my goodness. That's the interesting part as well. When I was first diagnosed and went to the surgeon, because the diagnosis was very extensive, I couldn't believe how long she said it would take. I really thought that she misspoke, because I was going to have a mastectomy. Then the plan called for chemo, about 4 or 5 rounds of chemo, and then 33 rounds of radiation. That took over a year. All of, because you have to space things out. You can't just back it. You have to have some space in between treatments. So one other interesting thing I found out that I wanted to mention that's important, and people, it's not what very well known. Chemo does not work for everyone. And when I say chemo doesn't work for everyone, my doctor took me aside after the chemo and said that, unfortunately, the chemo for me did not shrink the tumors. The chemo softened the tumors. And that was valuable information. And unfortunately, I went through a lot of, you know, typically bad chemo reactions just to have the tumors soften. But now they know. So that's another shocking outcome for me, that I just assumed that chemo worked for everyone, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more than a year's process, and the radiation was very harsh, and that's when, you know, you lay on that table and, you know, get zapped. But you know, the chemo is what, you know, physically affects you the most in terms of losing the hair and so forth. So.
And you did have the hair loss, right?
Oh yes, I was bald, totally bald, and it grew back.
How did it feel? I mean, you kind of maybe suspected it was coming, but when it actually started to happen, how did you feel?
It was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking only because, you know, a lot of my peers at this point in life were losing their hair,
and it was thinning out. And for some reason, my hair was very, it was thicker than normal. It was like, it was long, it was thick, and it was, you know, I enjoyed being able to do different styles. You know, it was just something that I like to play around with. Clump, and then it all started, fell out in huge clumps, and that was the end of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Can you tell us also, if you don't mind, about some other physical changes that you went through that you observed, that you noticed?
Well, the other thing is I gained weight, but I think it was a combination of anxiety because, like I said, the bulk of my treatment was alone because of the pandemic. No one went to the radiation with me at all. I was totally alone. Chemo started with people like, you know, my sister took me, but then they had to stop. Mostly it was like cancer and a pandemic, which, you know, had never been done before because we had never had a pandemic in, with any living people.
Mm-hmm.
So this was new territory, and it was very lonely territory.
So
like
you were kind of
else,
you were kind of a pioneer with this, trying to do this during a pandemic.
Thousands of other people went through it as well. Those that were lucky enough to not have their treatments postponed in this country, you know, there's a lot of people who had to deal with it alone. Some people had caregivers, those that were, for example, if you were in a wheelchair, they would let, you know, the person wheeling you in come in. But if you were able-bodied and could walk in there, you were going to do it alone.
Wow.
And that's a whole different topic, okay? Cancer during a pandemic.
So now, unlike your sister, like you said, who had this go on for her 10 years ago, this is fresh for you.
Yes, it is very fresh.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not even over because I'm still having to have, because of the extent of the spreading in terms of my lymphatic system, they still are doing scans because once it's in your lymphatic system, it could have spread and just be hiding or, you know, come out and pop out later. And, you know, because it was so extensive, they're still keeping an eye on things. They want to make sure it hasn't gone to the bones or some other organ.
And so how did your sister take it when you told her, when she found out? What was her reaction?
Well, my sister that had the breast cancer is rather, she's not very excitable kind of person. She's very pragmatic. She was supportive, I must say, but she wasn't rattled at all. Or she's just that kind of person. She's very stoic.
And did you find that more helpful? Maybe because of
no,
that.
I wanted a little hysteria. I wanted a little overreaction.
Okay,
I didn't get it because that's not who she is.
Okay, well, I guess it's kind of helpful in the way that you knew that going in. So it's like, okay, this is just who
right.
she is. This is not. This isn't personal.
No surprises. No surprises. Even when we talk politics, I'll go off, and she's very like, well, let's just examine this. And you knew this was going to happen. She's very like, you know, she's just very, very logical. I'm not very logical when it comes to that kind of stuff.
So now there's these obvious changes. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you're kind of a little touchy, so to speak, when it comes to dealing with our breath. I'm sure there were things that you had to look at in terms of changes in wardrobe, undergarments, you know, other clothes that you, did you find yourself changing styles of clothes because of what has happened? And actually, I guess what I, one of the things I want to ask before going through that, did you do any type of prosthetics?
Yes, because I had a full left mastectomy, I had to get the prosthetics. So the I was just surprised how heavy the prosthesis is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very heavy. It's slipped into to the specially made bra to hold
mm-hmm.
it, but it's a very heavy item, and I was very surprised at that. So yes, and I stopped wearing sleeveless dresses. You know, no, with the arms totally out.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I had my surgery done, I still have to have more surgery, by the way, because
okay.
when they did my mastectomy, some extra tissue formed, without getting into a long, drawn-out story, formed that has to be removed, and some tissue is out there that has to be fixed. But
like
because
scar
of the
tissue?
Pandemic, it's been pushed back because it's not considered, I mean, well, Emory has some elective surgeries, but they just
mm-hmm.
told me that they'd rather start on it after the beginning of the year.
So is this like scar tissue? Because I know that's another thing that we as African-Americans sometimes have an issue with is and how it
right.
developed.
Right. This is scar tissue. Because, you know,
okay.
some people do, and they call it, some. We used to call it keloid.
Right.
Know, back when, you know, when we were growing up and someone would form a heavy scar. But this is actually breast tissue that is sort of hanging, a
mm-hmm.
hanging pouch kind of thing that has to be removed. So it's not necessarily
mm-hmm.
scar tissue, but it's extra breast tissue that has to be removed.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying there are still more surgeries ahead. What does that look like for you in terms of the frequency and timeline?
Well, the timeline is going to be after the beginning of the year, and hopefully, you know, depending on whether I have a repair situation or full reconstruction surgery is up to me. Some people don't want reconstructive surgery. They just want to make sure that the mastectomy is as, you know, well done and wear the prosthesis the rest of their lives. Others opt for reconstructive surgery so that they
mm-hmm.
don't have to, they just try to have as normal an experience as they can with regular bras.
Okay. Did you have a choice in that decision, or was it because of the extensiveness of the disease that this decision was made for
no,
you to do
I
your
have
prosthetic?
I have a choice because at the beginning of the year, I can opt to have reconstructive surgery. It just has to wait for scheduling purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But I can have reconstructive surgery if I so choose.
Okay. Do you have more time after the break to talk a little bit more?
Sure.
Great. I appreciate that. We're here with breast cancer survivor and thriver Sheila Jack. She's sharing her story with us because we want to do more than just talk about the stats. And where the mammogram screenings are, we want to talk about real-life experience with breast cancer, and that's why she's agreed to join us today. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Okay, so we're going to keep going. We are here with Sheila Jack, breast cancer survivor and thriver. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I am posting, by the way, on the G's Power Hour Facebook page, information on mammograms, where to find them, and also we'll be posting some information on breast self-exams so that if you've kind of forgotten or gotten away from it or are unsure about how to do it, I am posting some of that information on the page as well. But, Sheila, I wanted to ask you about, I guess, psychologically, how you've felt about this whole thing, and have you had to get any type of counseling other than just the counseling for the process of the physical process of dealing with breast cancer?
Well, actually, it's interesting that you bring that up because I was on the trail of several groups that were groups that would offer counseling for breast cancer survivors, and then because of the pandemic, you know, like a lot of other things were kind of scattered and not found. Now, one of my main, I didn't have the counseling I needed, I think, and it's something I'm not giving up on. I need to find the right counselor. And I think it's important for me. Everyone has their own needs, but that's something that I haven't had and I really need it. So that's one of my main tasks, is to find the right counselor for me, because it's been a traumatic experience.
Is it COVID that is providing the difficulty right now, or is it just trying to find someone that you have a comfort level with?
Well, at first it was COVID because, like, you know, back when it first, you know, it was COVID was raging and things were shutting down. But now it's because I had some other family issues that were distracting me from doing a search, because it's a pretty important search to find the right counselor for yourself. But it can't be blamed on COVID right now. Things have kind of opened back up. And now that I have some time to do it, it's going to be on me to find the right person. But I think things have opened up well. But however, there's a rush to find a therapist, because everyone's, you know, looking for counselors right now. There's a shortage of them in terms of trying to get the right insurance fit, trying to get the right person. This country is really, really in need of therapy, and people are seeking it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, take a number and get in line.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing about it is, too, it's more than just mental counseling, too. I think there's some spiritual counseling that's definitely needed. Have you sought that as well? Were you able, or have you been able to get that? Is that something that is on your radar?
Well, I've had conversations with our First Lady, who happens to be an epidemiologist. She's a physician at CDC, and she's been very gracious in, you know, chatting with me, but it hasn't been formal, and it hasn't been consistent as I probably need. But I have been in touch with my church people.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you look at this right now, and like you say, you're not completely on the other side yet, but you're going through it. What do you think you would have done differently? Is there anything you would have done differently? Would you have done your exam more, or do you think there is anything that could have caught this earlier?
Well, as I mentioned, and I had some of those comments that I made about, you know, the different types of risk factors that are involved in terms of DNA changes passed from parents or lifestyle factors. It's not known right now which one contributes more to change normal cells to become cancerous. They don't know for sure.
I needed to be more in charge of my weight, my diet, and my exercise, and be more consistent and disciplined about it. And that's one of the takeaways from this session. I think people that are listening should just make sure that, because they don't know, you know, even if you have a family history or don't, that's what you can control. You can't control that, but you can control what you eat, how much you exercise, and managing stress and anxiety and things that are in your control.
Mm-hmm. Because I think, too, one of the things you just said, managing stress, I think that is so, so critical right now, and I don't think we pay enough attention to that. I think we're doing more of that now. But the thing that I find interesting with the whole stress thing is in the pharmacies, for example, or you know, even in, like, you know, some of the other stores, I go by now and I see there are over-the-counter remedies, so to speak, or treatments, so to speak, for stress and for sleep. And it's like, what is going on with that? You know, when did we get to the point that we need all this help for? Yeah, go ahead, please.
I think that our society has sped up to a point that is very, very anxiety-inducing. You know, back in the day, people didn't have instant news. We didn't watch how Congress made laws. We didn't watch the sausage making. We just knew the outcome. We didn't go through the back and forth. And people that have different platforms are overindulging in social media. And also, you know, a pandemic on top of social media, sped up social media, is really not a natural set of circumstances to endure. Our children are stressed out. Our families are stressed out. Individuals are stressed out. So it's really a nation of anxious. It's actually a world, really, of anxious people. So,
and we've gotten to this point now where we almost condemn people for taking time off, for taking vacations, for not being at the phone when it rings, you know, or for not being as engaged on social media, you know. And I've gone through some of these conversations this week about stuff, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. You know, and I get looked at like I'm the oddball. I'm like, you know, a lot of this stuff is man-made. Okay,
it is man-made,
and it's you know, there's stuff that we need to kind of look at. And you know, I was talking to my husband recently about stress eating. Because I've been gaining weight and stress eating and stuff like that.
What I
need to do about stress eating. And one of the things I do try to do is to curb some of my stress, to do a weekly soak in the tub. And I'm sitting there in my soak in the tub, which I'm glad I do. I was sitting there thinking about it. I'm like, you know, the way to stop stress eating is to stop stressing.
Exactly. Get to the root of it.
Stressing. You know, then you wouldn't stress eat. The thing about it, with Black women, we've always carried a lot of stress because we're always concerned not only about our families. Historically, we've had to be concerned about other people's families. You know?
Exactly.
And we carry it. And one of the things that I was reading in one report that talked about the issue with Black women and belly fat, for example, was that because of the stress and the development of this excess cortisol and where it builds up and how difficult it is once it gets there to get rid of it. I can't help but think that maybe if we're developing some of that in our belly, we may be developing it in other places, including our breath.
I think you're right. I think that that's a whole another piece of the puzzle, Gretchen, is the stress factor and the lack of sleep. This country right now is really, really suffering from a lack of healthy sleep habits. There are more over-the-counter offers for sleep remedies, as you said, because people just aren't able to just turn it off and, you know, just go lay down. And you, they said turn off your devices an hour before trying to go to bed. How many of us do that? How many of us don't watch TV or don't look at an email or don't get on social media less than an hour before we go to bed?
Right.
And sometimes laying in the bed, scrolling up and down. So it's
because
it's
of
really,
that, what
really
is it? They call it FOMO, fear of missing out. It's like,
right.
You know, what really are you missing at 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night from your phone?
If you don't scroll, you won't know.
You can't, but you can set your own parameters. And people, and,
right.
And we need to start setting our own parameters and stop feeling guilty about them, because that's what it is. We may set them, but then we feel bad about them.
Right.
And it's like, stop feeling bad about saying, I have to sleep between this time and this time. And so, and like one of the things I started doing was, because I use my phone for my alarm or whatever, but one of the things I started doing, because I had the phone by the bedside, and there are other reasons, you know, I mean, I'm thinking safety reasons and all that kind of stuff. And, there's a point to, like, especially if you are a believer, you have to say God is going to handle it one way or the other. So I took my phone and put it on the, took the charger out of my bedroom and set it in the hall. And I put my phone on the charger in the hall where I can still, when it's time for the alarm to go off, I can still hear the alarm. But it's not right by my bed. I'm not seeing whatever lights are blinking or coming on from that. Because as I told my husband, walking around this house, it's not totally dark like it's supposed to be when you go to bed. That's part of our sleep issues is, not getting the melatonin and stuff like that because other things, all of the light that we have in at night. And it's not meant for us to have all that light when we're trying to sleep.
Well, actually, Gretchen, what you just said is what the top sleep specialists insist upon. They tell you, because I'm actually one of those people, I'm actually going through sleep analysis right now with a sleep specialist from Emory, and she says, not only do you put your devices down an hour to an hour and a half before you're winding down to go to bed, but take them out of your room like you did and put them in an area where they can't be seen. Because there's too much temptation to look at them. And the problem I have, though, is I'm trying to monitor my sleep, and I have a Fitbit on. And then and when you're laying down in the bed and you want to know, I wonder what time it is, you can just tap it. That's too easy.
Yeah,
I probably take the Fitbit off as well because that's defeating the purpose again. But, at least it's not blinking and it's not lit up. You know, you have to activate it by tapping it.
So if you have some time, when we come back from this last break, I want to ask you some questions about how your life has changed and what you've decided on doing differently now and how between breast cancer and COVID, I'm sure you've got others your life. So would you mind talking about that when we come back?
Sure. Hi.
Thank you so much.
Love
Thanks.
To.
We are here with breast cancer survivor and thriver, Sheila Jack. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arclitex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now it's on for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks for being with us this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Hump Day is so greatly appreciated. I'm here with breast cancer survivor and thriver, Sheila Jack, and I wanted to ask you, for example, I know for me, I turned 60 this year, and, you know, I was like, my husband and I, but especially me, I can't speak so much for him, but for me, it was like, okay, there's some things that I am not stressing about anymore. I'm really letting go because I'm kind of on that other side of that hill, and you know, there's just some things that don't really matter anymore because there's nothing I can do about them. But being, you know, having had breast cancer and you know, dealing with all of the complications that come with COVID, your perspective has probably changed a little bit, has it or hasn't it?
Oh, it has a lot. It has a lot. And what I like to do, what I found is that you have to do what feeds you to help you navigate these trying times. Now, one thing I like to do is travel, and that has been curtailed. And I belong to a class of women who, in all the years that we've been out of college, every year we would go on a girls' trip. Well, I had stopped going on the girls' trip. Well, actually, everybody did when the pandemic was raging, but I had stopped a little bit before that. Guess where I'm going this tomorrow?
Okay, where
I'm
are
going,
you going?
I'm going back on the girls' trip.
All right. Amen to that.
Shout out to Spelman College. Shout out to Spelman.
All right. Well, that's a beautiful thing.
We're going to New York because we felt that New York was one of the safer cities that we could go to. So we're going to go to New York. We're going to show our card. You know, some have gotten their boosters already. And you know, we're going to go see a play. We're going to go see the Tina Turner play. We're going to have dinner, fellowship with each other as we've done for years and years and years, and come back home rejuvenated.
Wonderful.
So if it's you know, some things that you like that you can't do in person, keep it going in Zoom form. You know, if you like to hear poetry readings or museum tours, there's a lot of stuff that's virtual and online. Conferences that are online. I missed the National Urban League conference just past. That was all virtual, and it was online. So just keep it going in terms of what feeds your heart and soul. And that, I was getting into a situation where I was becoming lax about that.
Now, excuse me, Gretchen.
Yes.
I actually have a question. Did she say Spelman College?
Excuse me?
Did you say Spelman College?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'm class of 84.
Who is this?
This is Princess.
I'm sorry.
And... That's okay.
Oh, okay.
I was listening in.
Do you want me to give my class?
No, I don't. No, we can keep that a secret.
Let's just say it's 484.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say hello to a film. Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to say hello to my Spelman sister.
Well, that's wonderful. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere. Continue with the show, but I heard Spelman, Gretchen. I apologize.
You couldn't help yourself. It's all right.
I couldn't resist. My apologies.
I know that's okay.
That.
And yeah, since you run the show, I guess I have nothing to say. But
Spelman is a wonderful journey. A wonderful journey. Thank you, Gretchen. I'll be quiet now.
That's all right.
It is a wonderful journey, and there's some very special women that went to Spelman and are going to Spelman. And our new tagline is a choice to change the world. But anyway,
that's
okay. Amen. I appreciate it. I appreciate that camaraderie is good. I mean, and having women support each other like that is very good. But speaking of the women to come, how would you talk to young women now, given your circumstances?
Well, again, I would say to my African American sisters, our track record with lifestyle factors, which are very, very, very important, has not been what we would like it to be. And at one point, I'd have to check the latest stats, but I was doing healthcare communications, and the CDC had a frightening statistic that 80% of black women were overweight. That's not the latest one. I have to look up and research what it might be today, but this was when I was doing healthcare communications, which still was in the 2000s, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Frightening statistics. So I think we need to do a better job at managing our diets, our weight, our exercise, and limiting those factors that are not healthy mentally, such as overindulgence in social media, not managing anxiety, ignoring when therapy could be helpful and is needed, and, you know, just keeping yourself as healthy and as active as you can so that you can be the best wife, sister, mother, auntie that you can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think having been raised by a woman who raised, along with my father, seven children, she was a master of compartmentalizing and pushing things down. And that often doesn't have good outcomes. But I think that my mother's generation and older, that's just who they were, and that's how they rolled. They did that so that they could take care of business without skipping a beat. But it was not easy for them, and it wasn't always the healthiest thing, but that's just what they did.
Yeah.
So the other things I mentioned for a young woman, and not judging them, but just offering that as different things that could help them be the best they can be as they go forward.
Yeah. I've gotten overweight too. I was thin as a rail. I was like 95 pounds when I went to college. And I've doubled that now, unfortunately. And I really... It bothers me, but then at the same time, I'm like, okay, don't stress about it. Just do something about it. But, you know, I find myself getting a little bit worked up over it. But the thing about it is getting an understanding that this didn't happen overnight to a lot of us. And we've got to really recognize that it's going to, you know, it's about just making the effort. And, you know, and not expecting supernatural things to occur, you know.
Right.
But I've noticed even if I don't lose a lot of weight, I feel stronger and I hate going to the gym. I have to say that. And the only reason I go to a gym half the time is because it has a pool and I like being in the pool. So if you don't have a pool, I'm not going to your gym. That's just me. But I do more than just the pool. The pool is kind of after everything, and I kind of do that. I do some laps, but I also do just some floating just to kind of relax and de-stress. That's one of my de-stressors. But I feel, and I could be fooling myself, but I feel stronger when I do go to the gym. And so, you know, it's more of a matter of being healthy versus necessarily weight loss that may come, or you may be losing fat but developing muscle. You just don't know, but you have to keep checked. One thing I want
well,
to
you,
ask,
well, you know,
I'm sorry,
what?
Go ahead, please.
Right now, I enjoyed, I'm one of those people that enjoyed the gym. I like taking group classes. I guess misery loves having that company, but
right.
You know what? Now, I live in a state that has a very low vaccination rate, and I am immunocompromised. I think that's how you say it. I have to be careful because I have breast cancer. And I'm not walking up into these gyms because I'm not really feeling safe, because unlike New York City, which makes you show your vaccination card to get into a gym, it's not the case here. So I'm not really feeling very confident about gyms right now. And that puts extra burden on your motivation to do your stuff on your own, to exercise on your own. And that's really hard, because in a gym you just walk in there and just sometimes just fall in the class and do what everybody else is doing. You'll get a good workout. But now you have to either walk around yourself or get online, find some kind of exercise video that you can do, and there's an extra burden in terms of the motivation factor.
Yeah. Like, I do Zumba at home, so I have that, too. So, yeah, when I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable about that, I try to do that, too. So.
I can't go in the gym.
Yeah, I totally understand. Really, really quick, we only have about a minute or so left. Reactions, I know you were saying you wanted that crazy reaction that you didn't necessarily get, but what types of reactions did you get? And did relationships change once you once everybody knew that you had breast cancer? Did some relationships change?
I think that it ran the gamut from, you know, more stoic, like I said, people like my sister having a more pragmatic look at things, to extreme sympathy. I had some sorority sisters that were actually tearing up and crying, you know, not boo-hoo crying, or the ugly cry, as Oprah said, but really, really crying in, you know, in solidarity or supportive nature, just hearing that because it was so unexpected. But, you know, I really think that, you know, support is very important to women who have breast cancer. It's very important. As you fight this fight, you want to have that. You want to have people to have your back, and you want to have people that care, and it makes a lot of difference. So I really appreciated those who would support me and who felt my pain.
Yeah.
So it's something that if you have a friend or a family member that finds out that they have that diagnosis, and I'm sure they'll appreciate it.
Sheila Jack, bless you, and I hope you get everything you need. Thank you for sharing with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed talking to you.
You take care. Be blessed.
Okay, and
thank you all.
I hope it's been helpful.
Yes, you have been definitely helpful. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Trouble.